every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
And it all has to do with you. Thanks for tuning in. It's Rosie on the House, your weekend wake-up tradition.
I talk to the tree, stop and hear what I say.
Come on around back, Arizona. It is Saturday morning, 8 o'clock. Rosie on the House, your outdoor living hour, second Saturday of the month. So we are talking trees. If you follow along in our home maintenance calendar, you can get just by letting us know the address you would like it mailed to. Our 2022 calendars arrived at our office last week, so that mailing for everyone that's already on that list will go out mid-December. If you want to get added to that list between now and then and get a brand new, it's basically a homeowner's handbook for annual maintenance on your home, castle, or cabin. And it outlines all the highlights and talking points and features that we have in the broadcast scheduled for the next year. Well, in this one, we've got the Chinese pistache is lined as our tree of the month. And joining us in studio, Sarah Maitland from Save a Tree. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us.
Thank you.
And Dave Jernigan, Gardener's Touch. You've been brought in to talk about our to-do of the month as it relates to talking trees, and we'll talk about why it's overseeding lawns and how that relates to trees. But let's first talk about our tree of the month, the Chinese pistache.
Okay. So our tree of the month is the Chinese pistache, and it's a really beautiful dark green foliage tree, kind of umbrella shaped. It has a pinnately compound leaf, so there's lots of little leaflets on each leaf. And in the fall, it turns and has some really beautiful fall color. It's an old-fashioned type of a tree in a way that really it's hard to attain them anymore. They grow different cultivars now of the pistache, and one of those is the red push, and that's a real popular tree. And I think I gave you something to put on your website, and people can go look at that from Arizona Pistachio Nursery. And he's got a lot of information there about the red push.
It's on the quick links at rosieonthehouse.com. Just look for the pistache hyperlink. It's on the right-hand side, just about halfway down on the scroll. And I've been talking about doing this for a couple months, and time just gets away from me. And partly, some of these trees, I may not know where to go find and drive around and be like, oh, that's a Chinese pistache. But I'd love to get three or four public places that people could just do a drive-by and see what the tree is that we're talking about. Yes, we've got images on our website, but being able to see it in person is always a lot more beneficial.
The Chinese pistache, you'll see some really nice big specimens, you know, in residential areas more than anything. There are some at ASU Arboretum, I believe. And then there's also one that almost looks just like it, and I had to really work on identifying the pistachio Atlantis. Is it Atlantis? It is Atlantica. That's what it is. I walked up to it and it was huge, like 60 feet tall. Same leaf as the pistache, but a little smaller. But then the red push, I think, on Indian School, from Miller on, there's red push pistache all the way down the roads. And a lot of the streetscapes in the city of Phoenix are really pushing the red push pistache because it's such a hardy tree. It really takes very little water. And the fun thing about it, it's not as full and leafy as the Chinese pistache, but it has a brilliant red, or, you know, kind of a red, all the new growth comes out red. And so it gives it a little ornamental look to it. And that's why they call it the red push.
It's Christmas colors in the spring when it's blooming out with the next year's growth.
Well, we'll have the Christmas colors. December is typically when the pistache trees show their pretty color. And Dave, you were saying that you've seen lots of colors, right?
Yeah, they do tend to drop their leaves a little bit later than some of the other trees. It's around Christmas time. And for whatever reason, if it's a different cultivar or maybe a pH of the soil or fertilization or what, but there are different shades from burgundies to bright reds. So it is pretty neat how they do that. So, and I can't emphasize enough how hardy they are for low water use. I know when Ursula was doing her test for U of A. They competed well against Ironwoods and Palo Verde for water use. So they look very lush. They can really go with a lot less water.
So you get two color seasons out of the tree. Once when it's deciduous and it's dropping its leaves, they turn red or auburn or blue. But then in the spring when all the new growth comes out, you know, all the new leaves this year that are first time on that branch, it's all red on the ends. And it's green on the interior.
Yeah, and they seem to leaf out late too, don't they? May.
And the other thing we found with what you said about them really being tolerant of, you know, drought and low water use, we've been finding a lot dead in landscapes where we're coming out and they're toast, and it almost looks like Texas root rot. And they weep at the base of them. And I was talking with a couple growers this week and found out that other arborists have been doing testing in pathology and everything, trying to figure out what's killing these trees. And it's root rot. It's just overwatering. They're not finding pathogens. They're just finding that too much water. And a pistache, it kind of weeps in a way like it. I remember when I was a kid and you used to drip a candle over a bottle. It kind of looks like that down the tree. And that's the first sign of stress. So really back off your water if that's what you're doing.
And another place you can see this if you're out and about on the 303, there's a new east-west road that they're building, the Northern Expressway, Northern Avenue. That new expressway, any tree on that stretch from about the 303 into the First Light just past Luke Air Force Base, any non-native tree on that stretch, you know, 90% of them are red push.
I saw that yesterday. I was just at a client's house in Palo Verde, yeah. And I drove right down that area.
Yeah, that's a pretty landscaped highway, I think. They did a nice job with that.
There's also another pistachio, which is the Pistachio lentiscus, and I think they call it... do you remember the common name on it? the mulga? No,
yeah.
Is it mulga? No.
I thought that was an acacia.
Oh, anyway, it's another pistachio, and it has a much smaller leaf, and it has a little bit more of an erratic growth habit. But one of the things that one of our arborists told me today with any of the pistachio, don't trim the bottoms like with power tools. He said that's the best way to destroy the structure of it, and especially with the Pistachio lentiscus.
And the pistache, different than a pistachio, these aren't fruiting. You're not going to get any kind of nuts off of them. These are all ornamental decorative trees.
Correct. I guess Cochise County, it's a different species that's grown for fruit production, and it has to have 500 hours of cold. And so Cochise County is the only place in the state of Arizona that you can grow that.
And that is our tree of the month. Again, you can see more pictures of it at rosieonthehouse.com and our quick links. Big to do this week is this month for trees is overseeding.
Well, good luck overseeding this year if you haven't made plans already. if you haven't heard, my mom called me last night, said, it's even on the news. Grass seed has doubled in price. It's like a lot of COVID-related items. For whatever reason, they weren't able to get the production they needed, and there's a pretty big shortage of ryegrass seed this year.
I've been hearing about the drought in Oregon, and most of our overseed rye seed comes from Oregon. I mean, did it just not grow as much because of water conditions up in the Northwest this last summer?
I've heard as much that it's as much about transportation and being able to get it here, because even the loads that I was expecting, it was delayed quite a bit. So I don't really know the full reason, but they seem to jump to COVID as an excuse for pretty much anything that isn't there.
So there's a shortage of ryegrass seed. And this week, Water Use It Wisely published an article in their weekly newsletter, 10 Reasons Not to Overseed with Rye. And that was not in there. The shortage was not in there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think it's boilerplate. They say the same thing every year. But, but yeah, it is difficult and it's expensive. So Yeah, it's a good time. I mean, if you like your summer grass, then just let it go. Put some pre-emergent down so that you don't have the weeds. It's a good chance to get rid of some of those weeds that you've been battling, and let it ride and have a good summer grass next year.
So then forego the rye.
Right.
Pre-emerge, kill any weeds from coming back next summer, and save your water consumption.
Yeah, save your water consumption and also help your Bermuda out, because whenever you go to overseed, it's very stressful on the Bermuda grass. I know a lot of places will tell you, it's time to core aerate, it's time to verticut. Well, it's good for making money if you're in the industry, but it's not really great for the grass, because as the grass is going dormant, the last thing you need to do is take out chunks of the root or chunks of the stems. That is where the sugars and starches are stored, which they need to come back in the springtime. So, ideally what you like to do, we like to use a plant growth regulator to suppress the growth. And you also want to back off the water. Ideally, you want to look for nighttime temperatures that are getting into the low 60s or into the 50s, because that's when the Bermuda is going to stop growing anyway. Everybody is very anxious to get their grass in the fall, after the summer, because it's usually so hard on it, and a lot of times they jump the gun, and that Bermuda would really like an extra month to grow. So the old saying used to be, seed by Halloween and mow by Thanksgiving, and that still holds true. I seeded after Thanksgiving last year, after Halloween, and I was cutting grass by Thanksgiving for sure.
So we'll talk about how to do it if you can and do want to undergo the expense of a rye grass lawn. And one of the things that we started doing, which was Jay Harper suggests, he's like, if you want a lawn, in his opinion, it's better to just ditch your Bermuda in the summer and have a winter lawn, because the temperatures are more conducive to being outside and actually enjoying it than a Bermuda lawn when it's 120. He's like, no one goes out and stands on their lawn when it's 118 degrees. So we're talking trees here with Sarah Maitland of Save a Tree and Dave Drunigan, the Gardener's Touch.